Welcome to episode 207 of Five and Dive. It is Tuesday, April 26th. I'm your host, Craig Goldstein, editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Joining me as my co-host today, lead prospect writer for Baseball Prospectus, Jeffrey Paternostro. Jeff, we're like, I don't know, almost three full weeks into the season.
Things are getting real.
Yeah, I mean, not that not real, as we weren't last week. Like, you know, it's people will say stabilizing or reliable or whatever, and use that to project forward. I'm not sure we should be doing that.
Right.
There's a lot of questions about the ball. We'll touch on some of that. Still, Rob Arthur wrote about that. There was a great article in The Athletic today from Ken Rosenthal and Eno Saris.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen people, again, it's too early, but talking about standings, divisional stuff. When do you start paying attention to standings? I'm curious.
Memorial Day, I think, is usually the
we're still a little far out, but
I will do your favorite thing though. Let's do some late April war for you, Craig. I know you love that.
God. Okay, fine.
So it's actually not like there's nothing here. I just pulled up baseball.
No, it's
references.
Fine. I mean, the thing is, it's always just being like this player's been good, and they have been good. Like
Manny Machado, number one.
Okay, haven't realized how good he's been.
Yeah.
And he's been carrying that team offensively.
Nolan Arenado.
Okay.
Good baseball player.
What year is it? Are we 2018 right now?
Did have a bad error last night to start the Mets comeback against the Cardinals.
Well, we wrote on Box Score Banter today, Mark Normandin said that was a very Mets way for St. Louis to lose.
Yes. Wander Franco. Sure.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, potential MVP at age 20, 21. Mm. What is he now?
I think he's 21. We go from one former number one overall prospect to another former number one overall prospect.
Jerks and Profar.
No, J.P. Crawford.
J.P. Crawford, sure. Yeah. Okay.
Hitting like 340 and playing.
Yeah, no, he's been very
good. Glove level shortstop.
I said it lightly, but Jerks and Profar, I don't know where
he's also been really
if he's
good.
On the list. He's been very good.
But definitely on the list at number five, Keegan Thompson.
Okay.
Are we all done now, Craig?
Enough.
I will just say 6 through 10 because it stabilizes.
Can Byron
Buxton, Francisco Lindor, Ty France.
Yeah, well, Ty France is just a good hitter now.
Tommy Edman and Seiya Suzuki.
Can I just amend the list that the rule of it's not worth paying attention to until Mike Trout is number one and war two. It's not worth paying attention to till Keegan Thompson is out of the top 20.
13 and 2/3 shutout innings to start the season.
No, he's been great. You know, you want to know who else has been great? Will Crow. I mean, who cares? Like, whatever. Anyway, let's get into our first segment. Cincinnati Blues. Not being great. Yeah.
I did say a few weeks ago when we started the show with all of their sell-off moves that we would never open the show with Cincinnati again. Then they started 3-13.
Yeah, well, not only I don't think 3-13 would lead the show if it wasn't for Phil Castellini, right before their home opener saying, "Where are you gonna go?" and doubling down on it. And I appreciate the reporter who asked him the question to try and get him to backtrack before he doubled down. Brandon Saho, I'm saying his name right, had been updating their 11 game losing streak. They were 2-2.
They won on Sunday finally. Yeah.
They won on Sunday to go to 3-13, but they were 2-2. They lost 11 straight games to go to 2-13. And he had been updating it with attendance and various before they won on Sunday, they had led over the course of their 11 game losing streak. They had led in a game for 18 pitches total. Over the course of 11 games.
Yeah.
That is staggeringly
bad. Get a solo home run on the road or something. No.
Right.
Nothing. Yeah.
Right.
First inning.
No,
yeah, nothing.
None of it. No. 18 pitches they held a lead. That is stunningly bad. They are hitting 186, 262, 277 as a team.
Not great.
It's not great. Joey Votto has been awful. really, Tyler Stevenson was one of their one good hitters. We talked about him. He's on the concussion IL because of the Luke Voit slide. Tyler Naquin was late to start the season. He's like their only other good hitter.
I think they're the only two over like 100 weighted runs created plus. Only one even like really close to it.
Maybe they should let Hunter Green do some hitting.
Yeah. I mean is he a better shortstop than Kyle Farmer?
I know I've said this before, but we don't talk enough about how Kyle Farmer was a catcher. Look, I know he was a shortstop before the Dodgers converted him to catcher in the minors.
I think
he was
kind
a catcher
of
all the way through.
He's a really good defensive shortstop, and he came up as a catcher.
I'm not sure Kyle Farmer is a really good defensive shortstop. He's just playing it, but it seems to me like the Reds have not been able to find a shortstop for years at this point. And they just keep going to Kyle Farmer, who they lead off, who can't hit. He can't hit. I don't know. Jonathan India was not good in his first seven games. He strained, I think, a hamstring against the Dodgers. He's been out. And so he's only played seven games. So he's not been, he was not great, but he's been injured. That has not helped.
Jose Barrero is hurt, I believe, as well. So he can't spawn it there.
Spot. You know, it's funny. I wrote about this for Box Score Banner over the weekend because they finally snapped the streak. And Pecota had them projected at 80 and 82, which I think was very optimistic. We both, I think, took the under on that, or when we did the previews.
I only have to play like 550 baseball the rest of the way to get there. So,
yeah, well, obviously, this is a very bad start. But they weren't, even if you want to look at Fangraphs projections, they were a 76 win team. This they're not. I mean, this is basically point for point how I feel about like Arizona last year. Like, they're not this bad.
I say that, but
yeah,
there was significant downside risk here. You know, Votto,
I agree with
is old at this point. It seems to be going through a midlife crisis based on his social media. He's like doing like
based
TikTok
on
dances.
His interview, the first game, he said he's going through a midlife crisis. I'm gonna issue what's probably a hot take on Joey Votto, who I know everyone loves. I think he's too much.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah,
I like Joey Votto. I'm not anti Joey Votto in any capacity. It's just like capital T, capital M, too much. Like like he's taking pictures of himself fully body painted in green.
Yeah,
like I don't like. What are you doing, dude? And it's not because he's struggling. I don't care. None of that's.
Related. I mean, it's all, you know, like the stuff that he plays with like foul balls and kids. It's like it's a little it's a kind of. It's like a fine line to walk, right?
Yeah, and I think he's generally pretty good.
Yeah, I think he's generally on the right side of it.
It's recently just been like a little... The TikTok stuff, maybe I'm just old.
Yeah.
Definitely possible.
Not as old as Joey Votto, to be fair.
True, but maybe just as a personality, I'm older. Yeah, yeah. I'm willing to eat that. I just like... I don't know. It's just like a little much for me these days. And again, I broadly like him. I thought the interview he did with ESPN that first game was great.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, this is a slight departure. How do you feel about them? They had Harper mic'd up the last time. It's going to be Lindor this weekend. They're like passing it to the next person.
Right. Yeah.
How do you feel about this? I think I'm good.
I've enjoyed it. Like for this, the Sunday night game is barely a baseball broadcast most weeks, so I don't.
I think it's better than last year. I'm definitely enjoying this booth better than last year, and I also am enjoying that they've moved to 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, you talked about minor league games and ending, you know, in concluding at a reasonable time with the pitch clock and things like that. The baseball slate, at least early, has, I don't know if this is intentional. I hadn't seen anyone cover this specifically, but there have been a lot of days where, like yesterday, every game was done before 1 a.m.
I mean, they're not scoring runs, Craig, so.
Well, some of it is that, but a lot of it is they're starting at, you know, 9:40 instead of 10:10.
There's a lot more 6:30, 6:40 start times now.
A lot of time there's like one 10 p.m. East Coast game instead of three or something like that, so they don't drag out as much. I don't know. It's been nice.
Might just be the vagaries of the schedule early, too.
Yeah, exactly. It might change over time. I hadn't seen it. Anyway, the Reds are a damn disaster.
Yes.
What do you, I mean, do you see any hope for this team? This is a team that brought Lodolo, brought Green essentially out of camp. They technically didn't break camp with Lodolo, but they called him up. You know, what would have been his first start? They have, you know, again, we talked about India, who's last year's rookie of the year. Like, arguably, there are bright spots.
Yeah. Yeah, they have some young arms, like, even beyond that with Santillan and Vladimir Gutierrez. So, yeah. I don't think they'll be this bad. Like, I don't think they're the worst team in baseball. They're certainly playing like the worst team in baseball, but. You know, I still think they're probably going to settle in at like 70 and 92 or something.
Do you think Phil Castellini coming out and saying this actually had an impact?
I don't think the players super pay attention to that kind of stuff. I don't like,
no, really, but I guess I wonder, do you think the fans showing up? I mean, just the fans have been showing up with bags on their head, that which they were told over the weekend to remove. They were confiscated. A sign asking the Castellinis to sell was confiscated. They've recently announced that those are going to be allowed. He's apologized. I think you said this at the top, but I might have talked over you. He's apologized for a second time.
Yes.
Saying he was wrong. I mean, the first one was very clearly not a real apology. I don't know that this one is either. I think it's trying to save face, but I don't know. I don't know that it's getting better. I mean, what do you make thus far of Hunter Green and Lodolo? Green has gotten the majority of the attention. I've seen his fastball compared, you know, the pitch characteristics compared favorably to like Justin Verlander. Mm-hmm. You know, the difference is Verlander has like 2++ secondaries.
Justin Verlander doesn't have a 700 against on his
slugging against. Right. Yeah. Well, this is, you've pointed out, you said, I found the problem. I mean, the location, if you look him up on Savant, is the middle of the plate.
Yeah.
So he's throwing it middle too much. The slider is legitimately good at this point.
He needs to throw it more, honestly.
Yeah.
And his velocity was like significantly down in his last start too.
Yeah. That was the big worry. Lodolo, for his part, I thought has gotten progressively better. I think his last start was definitely his best one. Mm-hmm. 5 2/3, 7 strikeouts, no walks. He had 8 strikeouts against 2 walks his last time out. Again, only 5 innings. 5 2/3 was the longest he's thrown. But yeah, I mean, he got roughed up in his first start, but you know,
I think I'll be fine. Like, both of them need to sort of rein in the command against major league hitters. But I think that will get there to an extent. I mean, I generally preferred Lodolo as a prospect. I get why most other places like Hunter Green, but I think they're both. And again, you're always gonna be a little home run prone in that park anyway. So,
right.
We'll see how it plays out.
Okay, so you don't think they're gonna be the worst team in baseball?
No, I think they'll be like 70 and 92.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know Fangraphs, I wrote this,
if they trade like Tyler Molly at the deadline, do they bottom out a little worse? Maybe, but they also don't have that much to sell past Molly. So, I mean, Luis Castillo, if he's healthy, I know he's on rehab. I mean,
the
now.
Other part is we haven't seen Luis Castillo. They're going to be better with him in the rotation, certainly. Pecota now has them just under 76 wins on average. That's still, again, but it's 4 wins off. Losing streak dropped 4 wins off the projected total. Fangraphs, I think, has them at 70 wins again. Yeah. So that's 6 games off their initial projection. So yeah, I mean, you know, a losing streak like this will do. And they've looked 3-13 bit as bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and what the bigger part is to me, like the underlying stuff is they've looked every bit as bad as kind of the losing streak has. I'm not going to say from bad to worse because they're the worst team in baseball, but our second segment, the Blight Sox, the White Sox were expected to be good by everybody.
Yeah.
They were expected to run away with the division. They recently got swept by the Twins thanks to just a gargantuan walk-off home run by Byron Buxton, who, I mean, is Byron Buxton the best player in baseball when healthy?
So
it's, you know, this is like, it's for people who listen to like the old, there's an old fantasy podcast on ESPN, but it's like Byron Buxton, if he's healthy, is like the full
right name. I mean, he's still like, he strikes out a lot.
Yeah.
At a certain point, there's really not a huge chart here of him hitting for average specifically.
Sure.
He's such a good defender. I mean, like, look, if he's 250 and 40 home runs and 8 center field defense, like, I don't know if the best player in baseball necessarily, but that's a really damn good player.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Already had a leg injury. There's a
very
year.
Similar upside and also injury proneness to some degree with him and Luis Robert.
Yes.
You know, I think the upside is maybe it's not best player in baseball, but top 5.
Yeah, certainly.
Somewhere in that mix where are, you know, at times you'll be the best player. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Buxton is incredible. He took, a Liam Hendricks pitch out, and Hendricks was by far the best reliever in baseball last year.
Yeah.
And remains very good. But this team is, you know, you wrote on the doc, I know we think everything has Mets energy. I honestly had the same thought before you wrote that.
Because they're like a couple, elite, top level.
Like, there's depth throughout the lineup, throughout the rotation, but there's not depth below, like in the minors. There's no reinforcement.
It's also like a lot of like Danny Mendick and Larry Garcia right now.
Well, right, because, well, I mean, they signed Josh Harrison. I mean, their second base was always a problem, but like, because their outfield, they traded for AJ Pollock, who immediately got hurt.
Yeah.
But like, again, you go around the infield, you know, you go around the lineup or the defense or the rotation, and they're deep throughout those things. But the second you get to your sixth starter, your backup infielder, and any of those, it drops off immediately.
And they had serious injury concern, like Jimenez and Robert being hurt is not like super surprising, right?
Right.
These guys have dealt with injury issues throughout their career. You know, Moncada is still dealing with the issue. Giolito's hurt.
Well, Giolito just came back.
He just came back. Okay.
He's been out. But like, yeah, I mean, they're starting Vince Velasquez.
Yeah.
They're starting, they're going to have to start Johnny Cueto soon, I think. Mm-hmm. Lance Lynn, who has always been healthy and always thrown a ton of innings, you know, tweaked his knee. I mean, that's not.
But they don't.
I don't know that they should have anticipated that, but those things happen.
Right.
I mean, those things happen. You mentioned Eloy Jimenez being hurt, but you know, he strained a hamstring. He's going to be out six to eight weeks. You know, this is, and they do have some. You know, they have Andrew Vaughn. They can DH and you know, the same way that you could with Eloy Jimenez, run him out in a corner spot and be bad, right? Like defensively or whatever, but they have some, but like after that, you know, I like Jake Berger,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. He's probably more of a second division bat than anything. And after him, I mean, like, this is the worst farm system in baseball, right? I think that's what we had him second worst. Them or the Angels?
They were ahead of the Angels, I believe.
Okay. So, none of it's close. I mean, they're pitching. They brought up Jimmy Lambert already. They're going to. I mean, it's tough. And on top of that, you have Jose Abreu and Yasmani Grandal off to slow starts.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you, Jeff, is Tony La Russa the right guy to lead this team out of a... No comment?
I guess we'll see.
I mean, do you think, are you still taking them to win the division?
I think so. I'm not utterly convinced by any other team in this division, certainly.
Here's what I will tell you. Our Pecota standings at this point has Chicago at 88 wins and Minnesota at 87.
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable. I will just point out that outside of Byron Buxton, there's really nobody hitting on the Twins.
Yeah, but apparently, I mean, with their pitching that they've gotten, it's largely not been that much of an issue. I mean, Buxton's been very. I mean, yeah.
And I mean, like, I don't expect Correa to hit you know, have a 570 OPS too much longer.
So. Yeah, I will say this. If you just look up on Baseball Reference, Gio Urshela has a 696 OPS. Yeah. That's a 111 OPS plus. So
yeah, there's, fair enough.
We have to adjust a little bit for April right now. Luis Arraez also, he's basically playing every day. They're moving him around, but he's hitting 354, 426, 458. So sure. He's been pretty good.
The pitching has been really good so far. Dylan Bundy, Bailey Ober, and Joe Ryan are all.
Just as we said, Chris Archer has honestly looked decent. I know he got a little roughed up in his last start, but he's been fine. Sonny Gray has been really bad.
Yeah.
And the bullpen is still kind of
hit
or miss. But yeah, Bailey, the two guys, I mean, good for Pecota on Joe Ryan, 1.69 ERA. Again, Bailey Ober is a 2.81 right now. Mm-hmm. They're missing bats. You know, we'll see if the home runs. Again, those are both guys that really stand to benefit from if the ball is dead, which we'll get to.
Bailey Ober and Joe Ryan are both running ground ball percentages under 30 right now. So,
well, right. So that's a big change.
Yes.
Anything else on the White Sox on the Central that you want to touch on?
Not really. Again, I think it's going to be a little bit of a mishmash until it sorts out. Like, I wouldn't even like count out the Tigers. Like, I wouldn't count in the Tigers by any stretch of the imagination.
I was going to say, I didn't. Yeah, I mean, look, the Tigers are going to be better with Baez coming back. I know he was driving a lot of their offense before his injury. I said this to we talked about it. I think I said this in a thing with Mike Petriello last season, and I got a lot of heat from Tigers Twitter or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Underrated punchy Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. If they, Petriello was saying, if they got Carlos Correa, are they a contender, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, what are you going to do about that pitching?
Right.
Right. I mean, I said they needed at least one pitcher, if not more. Eduardo Rodriguez, I loved that signing. As I've said, he's struggled thus far, 5.3 ERA essentially. But he's missing bats. I'm not super worried about him right now. Tarik Skubal has been good.
Yeah.
16 strikeouts, one walk.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's big for him.
No home runs. That's the big one. Yeah. And again, talk about a guy who's going to be helped by a different ball. But he walked less than 3/9 last year. So it's not he had control issues.
Yeah, he's a command issue guy. Yeah.
But one walk against 16 strikeouts is a different level. That's a very nice sign for him. But Matt Manning is hurt and only went 4 innings per start in his 2 starts. He was okay, but is already hurt. Casey Mize is hurt, was not great again in his 2 starts. These are small samples, but like, you're already running out Tyler Alexander in your rotation. Bo Brisky, maybe they called up. I mean, this is not.
There's not a lot of depth here. I think it's like Joey Wentz next, probably.
Yeah, and maybe he's okay, but this is my point was like the pitching is it, you needed way more depth for them to be a contender. I understand there's also a difference between Carlos Correa's baseline talent and Javi Baez, but Baez has been better than Correa thus far, so I'm not. Sure. I'm not chalking it up to that, but they got Baez, they got Meadows, they got Rodriguez. I loved their offseason. I thought it was very nice.
Yeah.
And Meadows has been really good for them, but yeah, I just think they need to have a lot more pitching. I love that they broke camp with Torkelson. Green is going to be up. This is going to be a good team, I think, in time.
Right.
That time is not 2022.
Sure. I don't have anything to say about the Royals, but I will just point out that another former almost number one prospect, Andrew Benintendi, is hitting 388, 434, 490.
With a dead ball. God only knows. Yeah. I mean, great. I'm thrilled to see
also
it.
Salvi Perez is just having Salvi Perez season again.
Yeah, that's just who he is now, I think. But I was going to say, we could stick with Detroit for our third segment. Mr. 3000 Cabrera got there. It wasn't that long a wait.
It was literally his next. It was his first at bat in the next game.
Right. No. I'm saying between. So he went. He missed a one game. He made people wait. Essentially, first bat he punched it to the right side, hard ground ball to beat the shift. They were kind of overshifted there. Right. Again. Well, there was a little bit of a wait in that their game got rained out. Right. So it was like a game, day, whatever. It's the first game of a doubleheader. But he went out there. He got it. I don't know that I have much to say. Miguel Cabrera is an inner circle Hall of Famer.
Right. Yeah.
500 homers, 3,000 hits. I mean, you got the round numbers. He had the triple crown MVP. You know, he's an MVP multiple. I don't know that there's that much to say about him that hasn't already been said. You know, the interesting thing that I've seen people run down is who's the next person to get to 3,000, because it is bleak.
Yeah.
The
same people predicting like Wander Franco. Yeah.
Cano is the closest. He's right. Not going
to
get there.
Right. He's... Yeah. I mean, when he was traded to the Mets, I kind of expected I didn't know how great he'd be, but I figured he'd already been very durable, that he'd sort of grind out another 500 hits or whatever over 4 years without too much of an issue. And then there were some issues. So.
Right.
But yeah, he can't catch up to like 92 right now. So that's probably, probably not going to get there.
Not a good sign. And look, like I think he had a good chance, but again, right. the suspension,
it's always
the 60 game season is impacting a lot of people's chances, honestly, to some degree. The popular names I've seen are Jose Altuve. Mm-hmm. I think that's a rough one. You know,
he's already having like back issues and injury issues the last year as well.
Yeah. He can't go to first, and the DH all over will probably help him a little bit. I think he'll keep hitting, but that's tough. Freddie Freeman, I actually think that's if I'm putting money on someone as the next one, I think it would be Freeman. It's not going to be easy.
No.
But he has the kind of Miguel Cabrera-ish profile of a very good hit tool. I think he'll age fairly well into now Cabrera aged really well until he didn't, and then it was like a very steep drop off. But Freeman has a pretty short swing for a big first baseman. He's gonna have first base. He's gonna have DH. He has health. He's been healthy. This is the kind of guy that if he hangs on till 40, 41. Could get there. I mean,
he has a good walk rate, but he doesn't walk so much that it's going to cut into his hit total significantly.
Right, and that's the problem with guys like Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, et cetera, you know, people like who came up. I mean, and the thing about Cabrera is he came up at 20, played 90 games almost at age 20, and literally we saw never went back down to the minors.
Yeah. Freeman was up at the end of his age 20 season as well. And then
I'm saying, but this is the profile.
Freddie Freeman by the time he was 21. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the profile.
No, you need to play 20 seasons and average 150 hits a year. Like, it's very simple math.
Right. But I don't know. I thought there was
The thing about Freeman's never had 200 hits in a season.
Yeah. That's tough.
No, but he's been
relatively close, right?
Yeah, 191, 180, usually in the 170s. So if you assume like if he's 180 for the next five seasons, that gets him to 26, 25. Can he kind of hold on? I mean, that'd be 38, but can he hold on for a few more years past that? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, and again, the question is like, and this to me is where the 60-game season really hurts, right?
Right.
I mean, because it's silly to make it about one thing, but it does, yeah.
He had 73 hits in the 60 games that year. So,
yeah, I think I mentioned this on my box score banner. I was recapping this a little bit, but I read a Joe Sheehan newsletter that I thought made a really good point, which is, of course, it's always the case, but like context is king, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he looked at the last five people to enter the 3,000, not the last five, but there's five in the group of 3,000 hit guys. And he went through Pujols, Beltre, Suzuki, Ichiro, A-Rod, and Jeter. And what the league average batting average was
right, yeah,
in that time. for those guys in order, 260, 261, 259, 263, 263. Mm-hmm. If you look at the guys, he picked out five guys, Altuve, Freeman, Machado, Trout, and Harper. The league average in their careers, 252.
Yeah.
And again, those are career league averages for all, you know, the guys I listed first and the guys I listed second. That's, some of this is walks, right? Like, again, like Harper and guys like that walk a lot. You mentioned that Freeman doesn't do it quite as much, and that's like to his benefit for accruing hits. But like, it's also the stuff we're dealing with the ball, the changes in defense. I don't mean the shift. I'm talking about guys, I always talk about that Rob Arthur piece, but guys playing deeper.
Yeah.
They're just, you're losing hits.
I mean, you could see a way, and this could also swing back if they ban the shift and make all four infielders start with their feet on the dirt or two on each side. Like, this could change a little. I don't know how much it will, but it could change a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it could change a little. I was actually just talking about this with someone over the weekend, but like, I don't like the idea of banning the shift because I like giving, I like that defense should be able to do what it wants to do, to be able to, you know, stymie offense, whatever, philosophically.
Right.
I also think if they do it, I don't think people are going to complain about it much, like it not being there, right? I think it's like, it's going to look like the baseball you and I certainly grew up seeing. It's go, like no one's, so no one's going to complain about not being able to, or it's not even not being able to do it. I like, again, philosophically, I don't want it, but functionally or practically, when it's in effect, I seriously doubt I'll ever complain about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because like, it's complaining about a thing that's not there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're just, it's not going to be that bad. It's going to be like, and everyone's going to be playing with the same terms or whatever. So it doesn't, it's going to be fine. I don't know. I'm trying to come around on, and it's the same thing to me with that pickoff move, by the way. Like, again, I want pitchers to be able to throw over as many times as they need to hold a runner, but like the practical effects are probably going to be guys run more, whatever. And I'm not going to complain about that.
So I don't think the AA has the shifting rule this year. And like, you don't really know, like they move their guys over, like they shift them over as far as they can, and they stand as far back as they can against like whatever Michael Toglia or whatever left-handed power hitter is up. But yeah, I don't really notice it, and I don't think it's broadly affected play. The pickoff rule I hate, because that's just going to be, I don't like turning a single into a double, but
I also don't like it. But I think the
guys, like, guys don't throw over that much, like,
right. I mean, that's the thing. I also think, by the way, that like a lot of the a lot of these hits into the shift, like people say, oh, we hit into the shift, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of them are where, broadly speaking, a second baseman normally standing could get to it.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the feet on the dirt is maybe more impactful given how hard these guys hit the ball these days. But you know, again, it's not the deep guy who tends to take away so many hits. I feel like, maybe I'm wrong,
but I
do think there's oftentimes like a second baseman will get to these balls in a fair number of these cases. Anyway, we're a fair ways afield from Miguel Cabrera and 3,000 hits. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I would pick Freddie Freeman. I'm curious, who would you kind of lean towards?
I mean, honestly,
if anyone, do you think anyone's going to get there?
Oh, I think someone will get there again. So there's the argument, is there someone that's playing right now? I think Wander Franco is an interesting shout, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to walk, but he's not going to walk a ton. He has elite bat to ball.
Elite.
He came up at
Nick 20. Madrigal. Can we get a Nick Madrigal?
Nick Madrigal can't stay on the field either. I wonder if Franco also hits the ball a little harder than Nick
Madrigal. Yeah, just a little. Also, Madrigal started at 23. It's not happening.
Yeah, right. Much to Jarrett Seidler's dismay, I'm sure. But but yeah, I mean, it's a little too clever by half, probably. But
yeah, I mean,
like, the thing is, like, I think the aging curve will get to Freeman eventually. Same with Altuve.
Soto
walks too much. Harper walks too much. Again, guys that came up pretty young. You know, Acuna isn't really a batting average guy. I have like young stars in the league right now.
Bogarts.
Devers maybe. But again, I don't know how Devers is going to age. And he's been a little up and down. You know, he's certainly capable of running off some 300 seasons, and he doesn't walk a ton. He has a 200 hit season, his big 2019. He got 200 hits. He was back up. He was 165 last year. You know, he came up at 20. He's already banked 617 hits in his age 25 season. But again, and he's a guy that's going to probably move to first base DH at some point, which might help extend his career. But it's really tough. Like, Rafael Devers was a great prospect. Wander Franco's on a different level. So I think that does matter to an extent, projecting both like peak value and longevity. Now, any like stuff can happen, obviously, but I'm saying broadly speaking, I think your tippy top prospects, you can tend to dream a little more with them for this kind of outcome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the list is so rough. You know, all these guys are either so far away or so far into their 30s that it's really tough to, I mean, like, you know, again, I tossed out Bogarts. He's at 1261.
Yeah.
It's just so the longevity required. And again, some of these guys might shift down the defensive spectrum and add to their.
And like, again, like a really good player that doesn't walk a ton, Francisco Lindor, came up at 21, hit 300 in his first, 313 in his first half season. Been a very good hitter since then. A guy that does like walk above average walk rate, but not, you know, it doesn't really cut into his hit total. 1,020 hits.
Yeah.
It is
not a chance.
It's not a chance, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that is to go back to kind of what Sheehan's point and many others have made this point too, is like it's just the era. Like it's it's a different game right now. So look, maybe the changes that the league is making can get us closer to the environments that kind of produce these type of guys. I've talked to Patrick Dubuque about some of this. I think he has suggested kind of, and it's a very kind of, I don't know, maybe sabermetric 1.5 type of suggestion, but like just creating new round numbers to care about, you know, maybe total bases, like 5,000 total bases or something. Right. Like he's made the point. It's like, if you look at who has that, it is a, you know, relatively inner circle Hall of Fame type player has that total, you know, maybe that's worth caring more about as a way to understand, like, again, how the game has changed over time. But I don't know. So something to think of. I told him to write an article about it. So maybe we'll get that one day. Anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with our last two segments. We're back with episode 207 of Five and Dive. Our fourth segment, we're going around the horn. We're doing some uniform talk.
Yeah.
The City Connect uniforms came out for Kansas City.
You were very excited about this.
I think they're very nice.
I think they look exactly like the Cubs ones.
Oh, come on. They're better than the Cubs ones.
It's just like the Navy on.
It is the Navy. I agree. The same exact Navy. It's not, well, first of all, they did white pants, which is a vast improvement.
Yeah, sure.
The blues offset each other well. Yeah. The logo is very good.
The hat's a lot better, I will say that.
The hat is nice. The logo is like the Art Deco style.
I like the Art Deco, yeah.
It's nice. I think it's much more to me, the connection to Kansas City and like their actual uniforms and whatever make a lot more sense than the Cubs one. And like the Dodgers one is also just all navy blue. It's like terrible. I mean, like I just thought this looks a lot better. The number font is nice.
I like the hat a lot. The unis are just whatever to me, really.
I think they're fine, but as a whole look, it's pretty good. I would say it's in a top five of the City Connect. I don't think it's approaching the Miami.
Yeah, of course. Which is by far the top. Very high, high bar.
Well, they came out with that first, right? I mean, do you like it better or worse than the Nationals? with the slate gray.
I like the Nat. I like it more than the Nationals, but the Nationals are a close second.
Yeah, that's fair. We also had yesterday, this was going around online, Trout half swing triple.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, did you get to see this?
I did.
Do you make anything? I mean, I don't know.
Whatever. It's very enjoyable. Yeah. He's still really good, Craig. He's hitting 326, 436.
Yeah, I don't know if I need to see him busting it for a triple in that situation. Yeah. I was like worried about his calf a little bit, but I guess if he's not, that's good. He's still extremely good. Did you see someone on the Yankees Twitter did an edit where they did the half swing, and when it cuts to the, away from his swing to where the ball is going, it's just carrying and carrying and carrying out to the right field corner. You know, they took a different highlight and subbed it in. I thought it was very, a lot of people fell for it. I thought that was really good. Mike Trout he's not in the top 10 in WAR based on what you were.
He had missed a little time.
Yeah.
He doesn't play a game, but yeah.
Yeah, he's at 13 games, but yeah, 326, 436, 696.
If he keeps hitting that, I think he's going to get into the top 10 in WAR at some point, right?
Yeah, well, he's leading the league in OPS. Mm-hmm. He's got black ink on his BREF card. So
a lot of black ink there.
That's pretty good. Yeah, well, but I meant this season. You know what? Who else is doing pretty well for the Angels at this point? You're going to make fun of me. I'm going to make you guess, but I'm going to tell you that you're not going to guess who I'm going to say.
Is it like just like Taylor Ward?
It is. I didn't think you were going to get it. It is.
I saw Taylor somebody Ward. Posted something about Taylor Ward on Twitter.
It's nine games. So less than Mike Trout. Do you know what he's slashing?
He's like, it's like 300, 400, 500, right? Something like
367,
that.
525, 700.
Oh, right. You had a ridiculous OBP. Yeah.
40 plate appearances.
Yeah.
I think I said before the season, I think Taylor Ward is, I don't think he's this, obviously, sure. Anything like this. I think Taylor Ward is good now.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Adell.
Yeah.
250, 264, not walking. No. So you guys, 481. That's a 745 OPS. That's a 117 OPS plus right now.
Yeah.
It's very boomer bust.
Yeah.
I tweeted this, that my guys with broken swings are fixed now because he and Bellinger homered the same day. I do need to touch on Cody Bellinger, who won NL Player of the Week.
He said he got his punchies out in spring, and he got his punchies out in spring, Craig.
That's exactly right. 254. Well, he's still striking out.
Sure.
I would point
out. He's going to strike out. But
he got a 21-5 strikeout to walk ratio. He's at 254, 313, 542. He had two home runs that game. He has this is, I think, the interesting part of Cody Bellinger. He has played in 16 games.
Yeah.
In 15 of those games, he has either zero hits or two hits. In one game, he has one hit.
Send that to Suspettus Barbecue so they can update their fun facts.
That's the very, the very specific stat. Mm-hmm. They're like, it's a lot of extra base hits as a 545 slugging would tell you. But like for a guy who is, talk about boomer bust is, I guess, the phrase I was thinking of. But yeah, I had mentioned this obviously throughout. We had Rob Arthur update the state of the baseball at BP. The drag is up on the baseball. There are potentially a lot of reasons for this. There was an article on The Athletic today, as I mentioned, by Ken Rosenthal and Eno Saris. They talked to Meredith Wills, who has, individually like taken apart the baseballs to see kind of what MLB is doing and how they're affected. It just, for all, I mean,
I mean, MLB the came out. MLB came out today and said they're using a new baseball and they expect it to go about 2 feet shorter.
Wait, when did
they? Yeah, I thought they literally gave a quote on it. It's on
Twitter, in that article.
I don't know if it was in that article, but I saw it on Twitter. Hang on, let me find it.
I thought that was that what they said last year.
Maybe I'm conflating.
But regardless, it is, again, we've talked about they're using humidors in all 30 stadiums now. Again, that shouldn't necessarily dampen things, but apparently the weather conditions to this point.
Okay, you're right. It's the original ball intended for use in 2021.
2022,
supposed to reduce batted ball.
But we're way down.
Again, but that ball is the only one in circulation this season. So it is just, it's not the two baseballs anymore, basically.
Well, is what kind of the interpretation, but I also saw Meredith Wills saying they didn't actually say that. They said they're using the 2021 thing, but as she showed, there were multiple kind of versions of the 2021 baseball in play in 20. But anyway, yeah, we'll see. But I do think the humidors are having an effect. I mean, again, this is the article. I recommend you read the Athletic article, but it gets into like what the dew point is at this point. It's been a relatively dry April, such that the humidors probably are like humidifying the baseballs, even in places that would normally see it over the course of the year, like dry it out a little bit. Like places like Oakland are very humid in general, but they don't get that way until July and August. So it probably is dampening things right now, mm-hmm. but is probably not going to necessarily be that way all year. But Meredith, Wills had a theory that said, like, because they don't climate control the balls when they ship them, they dry out, and then the humidifying kind of it affects the yarn in the ball and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's well worth a read. As I said online, like, I love that baseball now. My love and interest in baseball means I need to understand accounting to understand why teams are making certain trades, mm-hmm. and also weather to the level of Mike Trout. Like, I've got to care about dew point. This is not where I want to be as a baseball fan. Can you iron this shit out?
Like, this doesn't happen in other sports, right? Like, if any other sport had this much issue with their main piece of equipment, like, it would be a much bigger story.
We've talked about basketball switch. Right. They went to like a tacky ball. They undid it. They also, this year, I believe they switched, either this year or last year, the manufacturer of the ball changed. Yeah. Everyone seems to be okay with it this year.
Right.
I don't know how this is a problem year after year after year after year for baseball. And we have seen other baseball leagues just come out and be transparent. Yeah. And address
that's it. The other thing is baseball's never transparent about this kind of stuff. Like, again, this was a memo they had to get. Baseball's just like, you're just having with the baseball.
Well, and this is the other part that bothers me, is that people say, like, oh, last year they were more transparent. They said that privately to teams and it leaked. They were not transparent about it to anyone but like the teams themselves. Mm-hmm. And Bob Nightingale had a notebook that noted players think that there are two baseballs in play this year. I mean,
there might be.
Rob Arthur's piece talks about how the standard deviation, he said, in hindsight, looking at 2021, if you look at the standard deviation for drag, it suggests that there's certainly this kind of anomaly between the, like, whether it's two baseballs. I mean, MLB admitted it, so there were two baseballs, right. But you know, that you could see it in the drag. He said that has carried over to 2022 thus far. Doesn't necessarily mean there are two baseballs, but he's just noting that the standard deviation gap that was in place still exists this year. So yeah, I don't know. I don't understand why it's such an issue for the league. I mean, I assume it has something to do with their very loose standards for what's an acceptable or, you know, qualified baseball or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think the offense is going to be down this year. And
it sure looks like it.
It sure looks like it. And the question is, like, to me, is that I think hitters will adjust eventually, but it's going to be kind of ugly for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can adjust is the other thing if the ball's not carrying, but.
Right. I mean, sure. And again, I think they mentioned this with Zach last week, but like, these are turning into outs at the wall. These are not turning into extra base hits. That's not what's happening. I mean, just over the weekend, I noted the Tigers in the Miguel Cabrera 3000 hit game, they scored 13 runs. They won 13-0 over the Rockies. They had 20 hits. 18 of them were singles.
I will just point out that an exactly 100 WRC plus this year is Starling Marte, who's hitting .235, .297, .353.
It's awful. That's awful.
It's not great.
Okay. Non-literal baseball of the baseball news. Michael Conforto, who Scott Boras had said was going to be doing a tryout for teams, etc. He's missing the year.
Yeah, he's shoulder surgery.
I don't even know. I know it's his job to hype up interest, whatever, but he literally had come out and said, like, it's a slow start, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
I think my understanding is he might have played through it if he had the right offer, but Pitsy didn't have the right offer. He just got shoulder surgery to clean it up.
Yeah.
And try again next year. So, yeah.
Sure. So we'll figure out if Michael Conforto is actually good next year, I guess.
Sure.
John Means is getting Tommy John surgery. That's a real blow for the rebuilding Orioles. It's a real blow for someone they probably would have liked to trade.
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, maybe this makes him more likely to be part of that next good Orioles team.
You think they could just, you know, call up Grayson Rodriguez, but no,
not yet.
Not yet.
I'm guessing not till June.
Yeah, late May, early June would be my guess. Yeah. Do you know who their actual starters are now?
Okay. I know Jordan Zimmermann has been very good.
You mean Bruce Zimmermann, not Jordan Zimmermann.
I do mean Bruce Zimmermann. I knew it was a Zimmermann. Baltimore native Bruce Zimmermann.
Yes,
I
don't know why I said. Local boy, yeah.
I know he's not a starter. Jorge Lopez is throwing 98 and still is not good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to name Orioles pitchers. I know Felix Bautista is there because Robert the bullpen, wrote about him. Ryan Menendez wrote about him for us. Who are their starters?
I will say legitimately, I don't know who two of these people are.
Boy, it's bad that... Okay, so is Keegan Aiken starting?
Keegan Aiken is not starting. Neither is Mike Bauman. So I'll save you that one.
Oh, that's tough. Okay. Yeah. Boy, I have not watched a single pitch of the Orioles this year. I should know either. This, though, because I'm sure there's a lot of carryover from last year. Is Dean Kremer?
Dean Kremer, no, as you might recall, Mike Elias is very disappointed in Dean Kremer.
Yeah, and Keegan Aiken, and I thought Bruce Zimmermann to some degree. Yeah. I know some of these guys, right?
Yeah. There's a couple. You should be able to get two more.
God, why do I know all the relief? Like, Paul Fry is still there as a reliever, right?
Yes.
I don't know why.
Named like half of the bullpen, yeah.
Bullpen, yeah. And I can't name more than one starter. Brad Bergeson.
Who? No.
No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Give me a hint.
One of them was a free agent signing.
Oh, Jordan Lyles. Right.
Jordan Lyles. Okay.
Jordan Lyles, right. They almost signed him before the lockout, but didn't quite. No, I've got nothing.
Tyler Wells is the other one.
Oh, sure. I should have known him. Yeah.
And then Spencer Watkins and Chris Ellis.
Oh, sure. Spencer Watkins, Spencer, S-P-E-N-S-E-R.
All right.
He was pitching for them a little bit last year. I don't know who Chris Ellis is. I know the name, actually, but sure, why not?
He popped up briefly with, looks like the Royals. He was bounced around in the farm.
I read something that mentioned him, I think, at some point last year.
A 4-point, I mean, he's only pitched four innings. He's pitched four and a third innings. He has struck out two and walked six.
That's good. That's a good start.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you this, Jeffrey. Grayson Rodriguez has a 1.26 ERA at Norfolk.
I know. He's been very good, Craig.
14 and a third innings, 23 strikeouts, two walks.
Yeah.
So we're just going to wait on him.
We're going to see Kyle Bradish probably. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's definitely. In pitching news, they are allowing teams to roster 14 pitches through May 29th.
So you'll still know all the Orioles relievers.
Yeah, exactly. This is an agreement between the league and the PA, I guess, as teams try to not have all their pitchers get hurt. But I guess the idea is we'll go down to 13, a 13 pitcher limit following May 29th. I don't know. I don't really have any thoughts on this. I guess it's fine if it's going to keep people healthy. I doubt it'll keep people healthy.
Right.
I am very interested to see what the league looks like when. So it still sounds like we're getting 26 man rosters and the option limit is still going to be in place starting May 2nd.
I don't know how many teams are going to run 3-man benches. That's going to be brutal, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see how teams navigate that. And I'm very interested to see how teams navigate when it's down to 13. I think that'll be a real shift. And I'm curious what, if any, effects it'll have on offense. I do think there'll be some effect and a positive effect on offense, honestly. It might not happen immediately, but I think it'll happen over time. I did mention Joe Adell earlier. You had Joe Adell watch. He had a very nice opposite field grand slam.
Yeah.
Anything else?
90 mile an hour cutter, but sure.
Yeah, so
like, we're gonna let this play out. I don't need to. It was a very nice home run.
I think yeah, it's just gonna be. Look,
Angel somehow blew a 6-0 lead to the Orioles in that game.
we've worried about him on velocity. Mm-hmm. I think with good reason, but he also, some of his doubles have been to straightaway center on like 95, 94, yeah. 95 that he's caught up just fine. I think it's gonna be. It's going to be up and down. Yeah. It's going to be development. This is development at the major league level, right? Sure. Like I don't think he's going to come out and be, he's just suddenly fixed. But I think it will be a season of growth.
Yeah, I mean, he's 85th percentile in average exit velocity, 98th percentile in barrel percentage, fourth percentile in whiff percentage. So
I think then that's going to be a bumpy ride.
The zone contact percentage is 66% right now, which is
that's very bad.
It's really bad. Yeah,
it's 10 percentage points worse, I think, than he was last year. So I think he can figure it out a little bit, but and I think a lot of that was that first week of the season where he was downright awful. But we'll get there. All right, Jeff.
We gonna do weekly zone contact percentage
update on Joe Adell? Yeah, well, we might
get there.
Our last segment, what to watch. What are you watching this week?
I'm actually interested in Garrett Whitlock against Eric.
That's the one
I said. Eric Manoah. Alec Manoah.
It's Alec.
Yeah, I know. It's not his brother. On Thursday. I'm curious to see, like, Whitlock, I think he threw 3 innings in his first start. I think he might be able to throw a few more. Is that interesting as a starter? He's got 3 pitches.
Yeah. I don't know if he can stay healthy
as a starter. I don't know.
He threw 4, by the way,
against
Tampa. 7 strikeouts, no walks.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the stuff to start. It's just, can his arm hold up? Because, as a minor league starter, he blew out, which happens, as Jarrett reminded me. He was a big Garrett Whitlock as the number 3 starter guy. Because, he was a Trenton Thunder pitcher.
He was a Yankee. Yeah. No, he was. And I think he can be a starter. I think it'll probably be more like a 3-4 kind of thing.
Is that more valuable than like a 2-inning shutdown guy? I don't know.
Probably,
but I don't know. I'm curious. Yeah, and I think Alec Manoah obviously is very good. And of course, Pablo Lopez going on Wednesday. It is against the Nationals.
So it should be a good start.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in Alec Manoah. I mean, Manoah, you said like very good. Like he's got a 2 ERA right now. Mm-hmm. He's on 6 innings in every start, which is no small thing these days.
Yeah.
I've seen, I follow Drew Fairservice, who's been a Toronto guy for a very long time. He does a podcast at The Athletic. He's been saying like Alec Manoah is that guy. Alec Manoah might be that guy.
He might be.
I don't know. Kevin Gausman has still been very good, but I don't know. Is he a frontline starter? Is he?
We'll see. He still has a 2-inning, 7-run, 5-walk start in him every once in a while, like a little more than you'd like. But
I've been really impressed at his, I shouldn't say surprised, but like impressed at his consistency.
Right, he's like, again, the command's been better the command's been better than.
He's throwing a sweeper.
Yeah.
He is currently number 3 on the sweeper leaderboard right now on at BP. He's thrown 82.
You're very excited about that sweeper leaderboard.
Why not?
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to sort out. Who doesn't like sorting things a little bit? I've been impressed with him. I kind of was not quite on the bandwagon when he was coming up. I thought maybe more of a, again, like somewhere to like kind of how I described Whitlock as a 3-4. Yeah. I think he might be better than that. He might be closer to number 2 kind of guy, which is often in the majors, the best pitcher on a pitching staff. So I like that one a lot.
Speaking of maybe a number 2, I think we're on Kyle Wright watch now.
I'm curious if this is painful for you. Yeah.
It's not painful for me per se. Like he's made a very clear change in terms of his, he's lowered his arm angle and sort of flattened out his vertical approach. instead of trying to make him like a bad sinker slider guy like the Braves were trying to do for a number of years.
17 innings, 26 strikeouts,
yeah,
2 walks.
Well, that's the thing, right? He's
the walks are yeah. the I mean, again, you go back to 2020
again,
he was only in 2 games last year,
right?
You go back to 2020 when he threw 38 innings and walked 24
and gave up seven home runs.
He has given up 0 home runs,
yep,
2 walks, 26 strikeouts.
Yeah,
this is I mean, like, some of this is probably just running hot,
sure,
a little bit, but like you said, there's a very tangible change.
This isn't painful for me, Craig, because I don't have to watch these starts like I did when I was doing video work on him. Well, if I watch these starts, it would probably be
fine. I know, but you've kind of long doubted, right?
Yeah.
And you've
well, this is like
said
nothing,
multiple times at BP events. Yeah. One of the reasons you think you're less prone to be biased because you care more about being right than you care about rooting for someone. But to your point, I mean,
it's not like he's throwing his four seam fastball at the top arm side part of the zone. He's throwing his curveball a lot at the bottom left side portion of the zone.
Two seamer, right? It's a different pitcher.
Right, it's a different pitcher. It's like literally a different arm angle now too, or approach.
I think what's interesting about that though is that that Atlanta had kind of Patrick Dubuque noted this in his offseason primer, but they've been very good at actually getting their guys to be better at in terms of walk rate in the majors than in the minors, but like they had all those arms, right? And like Ian Anderson, they developed very well. They've been known for getting guys to throw breaking ball in the lower minors. We saw like Bryce Elder be able to do that. They've got all these guys that get hyped and come up to the majors. And again, like Tukey Toussaint hasn't been very good. We ran this down with, you know, Sean Newcomb. Kyle Wright had struggled before this year. Kyle Muller has been on and off, et cetera. It's just interesting to see a guy go through this dramatic change kind of at the major league level. Atlanta hasn't done as much of that I threw them out as like a so-so developmental major league. You know what I mean? When we talked about
that, he's basically completely stopped throwing his slider and is now throwing his curve a bunch and getting huge whiff rates on it. So.
No.
Because that plays off a four-seam fastball up in the zone. Yeah.
It's just interesting because it's not been what they've tended to do with guys. Now, you know, he struggled for multiple years. Maybe desperation means that's what they're doing. But, you know, it's just been interesting. I will also just toss out that Shohei Ohtani will be pitching on Wednesday.
It's perfect or whatever it was his last outing.
Yeah, struggling a little bit with the bat. But, you know, I'm sure he'll figure it out. He's been very good on the mound, and he'll be going against Cleveland. That's another one to watch. I think that will do it for us, unless you have anything else.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, for co-hosting this episode. Thank you to our listeners for joining us on another episode of Five and Dive, brought to you by the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network and our Patreon supporters. You can support our Patreon at patreon.com/fiveanddive. You can get in touch with the show at fiveanddive@baseballperspectives.com. We are wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network and we'll be in that feed. Thanks again. We'll see you later this week.